In this episode of Crypto Over Coffee, I'm joined by Yarik, the protocol architect for AXO, which is a really unique and interesting decentralized finance project that I think you're going to want to learn more about. We're going to talk all about it today. We'll walk through some of the fundamental challenges that AXO has been working on solving, how their approach differs from a lot of the existing mainstream DeFi protocols, and how the functionality that AXO enables expands far beyond that of a simple DEX. And so Yarik's the best person to describe all this for us. So would you like to introduce yourself to the folks that are listening or watching?
Hi, I'm Yarik Kirnyak. I've got a quite interesting journey thus far. So I'm your typical Joe Schmoes from small town, but when I was 20, I've joined finance for real, and I've got to see probably what only 20 people in the world got to see at all. So how the actual exchanges work from the inside. And I've done it on a fundamental level. So I've led a team first in Sal Securities, which is the world's biggest market maker, where we basically were designing and running the bots that were responsible for very high chunk of the volume on exchanges you may know, like they call like New York Stock Exchange, Nasdaq, etc. And then I had the same experience in UBS, just on a larger scale. And at some point, you know, like I had this realization where it's actually really sucks, because if you want to do this thing, which probably a lot of people in some way engage with, which is trading, you know, like it's probably go on the street, like every second person did something related to that, right? Like it's very high barrier to entry, right? And that's like already during my job, I said, I think like, hey, how could you make it more accessible to people? And at the same time, fix a lot of legacy issues that are international finance. So, you know, like when you actually start working with that, you know, like you see, for example, like definition of the FIX 4.0 protocol, how SWIFT works, etc. Like you literally can see the years, I mean, like hundreds of years of financial history in how it's presented. So, you know, like crypto has been making a big change, like at least in the settlement, right? Like we can kind of like cryptographically, thanks to math, you know, like believe, you know, like that value is ours, right? To an extent. But, you know, like what about moving this one? Like what happens in motion? And that's what I got excited about. But it was like, you know, maturing in my head, right? For quite a bit of time. And then I learned about Cardano and hey, on Cardano, the UTXO design actually is perfect for this, right? And, you know, like after two hardcore years of development, here we are. We are live since February. So, you know, exciting world ahead. The revolution just begun, right?
Yeah, a long way. You know, we've come a long way already in the space overall. I think for people that have been in crypto for a long time, whether they have deep exposure like you to traditional financial markets and how these systems work, a lot of them being way, way older and more archaic than people even realize outside. So it's really inspiring to see what's been accomplished, even in some of the original, you know, DEXs, which we're going to talk a lot about. We'll talk about how you've designed AXO and compare that to things like Uniswap. So actually, that's kind of where I wanted to start with you, Yarik, is can you talk about and give folks some context on the fundamental approaches to building an automated market maker, an AMM, just sort of the crux of a decentralized exchange, what some of the challenges there are with those, like the constant product model that we see in Uniswap?
Right. So AMM is very interesting for two reasons. The first one, it did something absolutely amazing. So it made possible to exchange assets on exchange in a centralized manner. At the same time, it completely sucks. That's the worst possible way in which you could do that. And there is many reasons for that. So the simplest is everybody who's making the market behaves exactly the same way. What means everybody who's providing liquidity takes the same position, takes the same risk, which basically means, you know, like you are taking the worst position, right? Because everybody else who's coming to interact with this knows something more than you do just sitting there idly, right? So that's the first problem. Second problem is actually how it's designed. So as you mentioned, it's constant product, right? So you have X times Y equals const. And this actually defines the price you pay for the things. So it actually takes only a little value exchanged for this price to move a lot. And that's not something that happens in the typical market. In the typical market, you have a bit of the spread, right? So, you know, like I have to pay a bit of premium that you are providing liquidity for me now, but then like all the liquidity is at the edges, right? And you can see how big problem it is, especially for stable coins. That's why there are like different iteration for this formula for the stable coins, but it doesn't solve the fundamental problem. It only makes it slightly less worse, right? So, hey, we have it decentralized, right? But that's like literally the bare minimum. And it's quite shocking for me, to be honest with you, like that we went through so many different protocols deploying on different blockchains and we've never solved this. And that's why I'm, you know, like so happy that actually, you know, like on Axo, you can deploy market making strategies any way you want. So actually you have real competition and real idea behind that. So, you know, I believe over the time it's going to lead to much more efficient markets and actually, you know, like also what's very important for everybody exchanging the assets, much better match price, right? Because now you can be matched at the true market price, not to be doomed to the curve, and you won't have to deploy as much capital just for the curve to work better, right? Because, and this is like two-edged sword, right? So you deploy a lot of capital, the curve moves slowly, right? Hey, but what if it needs actually to move fast, right? Like maybe market is moving away from people, right? And you don't have the signal, so it's moving too slow, right? So there's not a good balance, and you know, makes market very inefficient. And if the market is very inefficient, everybody pays for that. You may not realize that, but like if the, you know, your favorite store is taxed heavily, right? At the end of the day, you as a consumer paying probably all of this tax.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one, right? People that interact with, you know, Uniswap itself or others that have been designed in the image of Uniswap's constant product model, you know, maybe people don't fully acknowledge, you know, things like impermanent loss, which expose you to significant risk, but also the volatility and maybe mispricing of assets that are derived from this design. And you know, so I've been very interested, especially in spaces like Cardano and UTXO chains in general, how we can design sort of purpose-driven, purpose-built DEXs and DeFi primitives that take advantage of this very different model at the base layer to alleviate some of these market efficiency issues. So we'll get into more of that as we go through the conversation. But I would first like to maybe take that information we just talked about with Uniswap, the constant product model, and compare that or contrast that to your approach in Axo. You know, I read the paper, but a lot of people in the audience probably haven't. So could you give folks an idea of how you're solving for some of those challenges that you talked about in market efficiency?
Right. Actually, you know, sorry to do that, but like, let's actually talk first about Ethereum versus Cardano. What's the difference? Because that's going to be a great base for how Axo solves that. And what's the difference between one approach and the other? So actually Ethereum is perfect for automated market making, because what you want to have with automated market making is everybody standing in the same line, right? And then when you stand in the same line to interact according to that formula. So basically the line is essential for it to work. And Ethereum has perfect sequentiality, right? So it's always known sequence in which things happen. So this model, of course, has been first created for Ethereum, right? And it, of course, had a big success, right? Cardano is kind of like the opposite of Ethereum, right? And it's very much like Bitcoin, where all your assets are living in a small boxes, right? And those boxes can have a bit of additional rules on them and how you can interact with them, but that's essentially that. So now you really have a lot of people queuing to different boxes, right? So how do you actually sequence that, right? And that's why the folks who went and tried to replicate automated market making on Cardano, they had to resort to batching, right? So we have this two-step process, which makes, in my opinion, the already bad process even worse, right? You as a consumer pay the price for the product inefficiency. And now Axo approach is completely different, right? Because we talked about everybody being an independent actor. And if you want to have a network of independent actors, right? All interacting with each other, like some like imposed rules, then UTXO design is amazing for that. Because now you deploy your strategy, so the rules with which the box can interact with other boxes, right? But now this is an independent box. So if you have the best price for my limit order, right? And maybe you have some complex market making strategy going there, right? We are going to be matched, right? So now when we are matched, this is also completely parallel, right? Because now I'm matched with you. And then it's like a bit technical, right? I want to go to, I can be matched like immediately with the next person, but then I always know uniquely which box I should be matched with. And on AXO, we achieve it using proof of fairness. And proof of fairness is additional thing that has to be supplement to the box that it also knows that's not only working according to its rules. So for example, like you said, I want to be matched at the price of 10 ADA. So that's your limit price. So if it's higher, then it is not going to match. You're not going to overpay, right? But you also want to know, hey, but maybe I could have paid less, right? So maybe now the spot price is 9 ADA, right? So there has to be proof be made that in among all those boxes, that's the best match, right? And that's iterative proof. It's very complex to run. So at the moment, we have the network of order matching engines, which is federated, but we plan eventually to completely decentralize it. And, you know, we can kind of see where it's going, right? Like, we have all this, you know, like side chains, layer twos, right? I won't be spoiling where it may be going, but that's probably the direction, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, one follow-up I had on that actually is, you know, think just elaborating on the comparison between Ethereum and an unspent transaction output model, mm-hmm. or extended EUTXO model if we're talking about Cardano specifically, where mm-hmm. you live today in mainnet. You know, you're comparing two very, very different fundamental, I guess you could call accounting structures or data mm-hmm. structures on chain, right? So you have one where the, you know, the highest order is sort of transactions, and on another you have like global state balances at the base layer on Ethereum. And that is something maybe not everyone appreciates that as a fundamental difference between the two. A lot of people look at, you know, oh, I looked at the smart contract programming languages. I look mm-hmm. at the dApps that are there, but not necessarily at the fundamental tools that someone has to build things. And so when the criticisms are laid towards Cardano DeFi, I think a lot of that, to your point, Yarik, is because a lot of the projects have tried to emulate the design and the principles of DeFi on Ethereum because it's successful on Ethereum, but that's not utilizing the tools available in Cardano or utilizing the UTXO model effectively. So is that sort of your foundational goal, is to design something that really takes advantage of these characteristics?
No, it was the other way around. So actually, Cardano turned out to be a good surface to be taxed on, right? Mm-hmm. So like we had, I had a very specific list of requirements in mind for this mm-hmm. to be able to scale. Like my plan goes very far, right? Like I just don't want to build a protocol on a Cardano, right? I don't want to go into mm-hmm. the detail, right? Like I shouldn't, right? But like my plan stretches very far, right? So when designing AXO, like the fundamental question I want to answer is like how actually solve trading, right? Not how to build it up on Cardano. And mm-hmm. when I've looked, you know, like consuming passively blockchain as a consumer, right? I've stumbled upon Cardano, which was a good blockchain to build AXO. Like it was the most suitable fit, right? Mm-hmm. But how AXO is designed, you could build it on Bitcoin. Like it's even like easier, like we have now BRC20 standard, right? So it's like almost one for one. But you could also build on Ethereum, right? And I haven't mm-hmm. talked much about that, right? But you could, right? And it's not like that much change required, though you would lose some nice properties, right? So now you would have to force the nice parallel properties that you have at the moment to be sequential, right? So it's kind of like mm-hmm. you have to do batching on Cardano to beat AMM, right? Maybe wouldn't have to go that far, right? But you have to make the model slightly worse, right? At the execution level, so it works. But absolutely can work. And always the easiest abstraction you can make is like how the layers to work, right? Every layer two can work differently. And that's for me such a beautiful idea, right? Layer one should be a settlement layer, like kind of like your bank, right? And mm-hmm. layer two should be application layer where you have all this custom visibility and then you can go very far with your custom consensus. And by the way, like I think like really Polkadot had a great idea right? With the developer tooling, right? With all their Substrate. Design. Yes, but I don't, like, it seems crypto is very complicated, right? Like, it's not necessarily driven by logic, right? Satoshi is driven by accidents, right? So here we are, right? But I believe also Cardano had like this idea of settlement, right? And they changed it later to be both settlement and computation. So, you know.
It's true. That's true. Again, maybe that's another one that gets lost in mm-hmm. translation over the years that, you know, even Cardano had to react, you know, in 2021 phase is we have to bring execution because yes. we need DeFi and other things. Well, so one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is whether this model could be extended to other UTXO-based chains, which you already said absolutely it could. I won't pry
almost
too much.
One-to-one.
Almost one-to-one, yeah.
It's like we have everything figured out, just like integration, right? So think of it this way, like the heavy thinking is done. It's just like literally integration.
Got it. I won't pry too much. You already said you want to keep that under wraps, but you know, maybe if you ever decide you're gonna continue to expand this, would love to learn more about it. So in reading the paper, which is 92 pages of DeFi content, and it's really really good stuff. One of the things that stood out to me, and I think that would be relevant for people watching or listening to this, is this idea of programmable swaps. And you have a domain-specific language basically to express, best way I can simplify it is the logic around different types of transactions or swaps, et cetera. Can you talk to me a little bit more about programmable swaps and Axo's vision for what that brings to the user?
That's such a fantastic question, right? So we've just talked about those boxes and instruction set on top of them, right? And I've said it before, but people didn't, I think, understood it, like what it meant by then, because I said Axo is not a DEX, right? And then like people kind of like pick it up in the wrong way. But what Axo really is a trading protocol, because you have a box, a set of instructions on top of that, and we write them in Xlang. So the programmable swap is coded in Xlang. And Xlang is a very specific language, so computer can do everything that's Turing complete. And we made it for the reason much, much less expressive. We made it only able to define everything related to trading. And there's like a lot of advantages related to that. So the first one is much more intuitive language. So for example, you can display it using nodes and edges, right? So it's very easy to understand. But also like when you want to explain to the person what it actually does, it bridges the gap between the machine and the human, because they kind of speak the same language, right? So like if you read as a human, you understand this, and if the machine interprets it, also understands it. But it also has very nice properties. I'm going to spoil it a bit, right? But if you have very simple language to talk about the trading that's closed, well, you can feed it to LLM, right? And now the machine can generate this for you, right? So for example, say I want this kind of the order, like suggest me order that does that. It can do this, right? Another thing, it goes to like my long-term plan, right? Like I mentioned, it also something that's so fundamentally simple that you can bring to the silicon level. So FPGA, ASICs, and then you get very fast execution, right? So that's like leaves a lot of very important doors open for us. Now, what does Xlang do at the moment? You define all the conditions for training, right? So for example, like if you go to X right now and then check algorithm code limit, that's literally written in Xlang. You check the market, it's written in Xlang. You check the bracket order, it's written in Xlang. You check the DCA, it's something you can see the code, and that's the code that's compiled to the Cardano blockchain and then executed. So every time you're running anything on Axo, you're either using precompiled algorithms by somebody else, or you're creating your own. And then this algorithm is the set of instructions on top of your box that defines what can happen with this box. It can be something as simple as limit order, it can be something as complex as Alameda's Stoic of market making, right? Which is like one of the more professional market making approaches. And look, like you don't even have to understand this. Like what's important for me as a user, in my opinion, is that you understand on high level what it does before you log into this, right? So it's important, it's like some line of communication, right? But really, what's important is, you know, like that this capability exists because it never existed before. So it gives you ability as a trader to express your intents. And by expressing your intents to the market, you make the market much more efficient.
Yes, you're basically defining through Xlang the explicit rules. It's those sort of fundamental pieces of logic that you talked about before in, in your box analogy for UTXOs, right? Each UTXO is basically like a box of assets, and you can express rules for how those assets behave in relation to others for matching on orders in a complex trading market. And so Xlang really is something that can be abstracted away by user interface, right? For those who maybe don't want to get super in the weeds, but you can also use it to, as a more seasoned trader, as a technical person, go really granular in how you interact with the market on AXO, right?
And what's great about that is it's already very similar to a lot of trading tools a lot of traders use. And a lot of traders are not technical either, right? So they're often using the tools based on graphs, right? Mm-hmm. And visualization based on graphs. So they would be like automatically familiar with that. Also, blockchain makes sometimes nomenclature a bit complicated because somebody already used the word you want to use like later for something else, right? So kind of like we have to invent our own. But if you think about that, a box for a strategy, it's literally your portfolio, right? And this portfolio has a P&L, etc., right? So that's also something that's almost like one-to-one, how you would think about trading on a trading desk. But also like if you are like just like real user, for example, like I know like you're used to interface like Robinhood, right? That also translates very nicely to that. So that's an interface that a lot of people who want to do trading can very easily interface with.
Yeah, I think it's a great analogy, actually, you know, because Robinhood behind the scenes is they're taking on all of the market complexity and the actual actions involved with trading. And they're providing an easy interface where it's sort of training wheels for traders, if you will. And they also do allow you to access more complex instruments like options, etc., with warnings, of course. And that leads me to this next question, actually, which is that, you know, Xlang, to me, when I read this paper, immediately it became clear, even before I got to the second half of it, which talks about all the things you can do with it. In my mind, I'm thinking the reason why this goes beyond a DEX, the reason why you said before, right, AXO is more than a DEX, right, that it's not really a DEX, is that Xlang allows you to create all kinds of different models all within one sort of trading platform. So that's why you call it a trading protocol. So you have different things that you've outlined in your paper, like lending and borrowing, options, futures, perpetuals. Like what's next for AXO now that you've got the foundations in place?
So what's very nice about the next steps is that they all very nicely interlock with each other. So the next logical step is lending and borrowing. Mm-hmm. And once you have the model for lending and borrowing, which basically introduces multiple actors to one programmable swap, right? Mm-hmm. Because now it's like the party who borrows, who lends, and what happens when it defaults or not defaults, how you provide collateral, right? So different conditions based on the different parties, right? Now, once you have that, you can, for example, go naturally to options, right? Because options is like literally lending and borrowing, just like in a different way, right? It's a very specific strike expiry condition, right? But now if you think about the options, right? Like now option is a very simple condition just based on the price, right? So either expire in the money, hurrah, right? So it's good for you, or out of the money, right? So you just like pay the cost of the option contract, right? But if you think like if the condition would be different, right, that's like literally prediction markets, right? So maybe the condition is what's the price going to be, or, you know, like what's the weather outside, right? Or who's going to win election, right? I think it's going to be a lot of interesting election this year, right? So it'll be interesting to bet on that. Once you have the prediction markets, right, then you can think about the futures, right? And then margin. And margin is then very important for futures because futures like constantly maintain your margin, right? And then once you have the futures with margin, you can create perpetuals, right? So the futures that never expire. And once you have that, you can go next. And basically now the idea for AXO is to bring the functionality to the Xlang that it truly makes it fully trading complete. So literally anything that happens in finance can be defined in Xlang. And that's going to be interesting evolution. So that's kind of like the Xlang evolution. As mentioned, Xlang is blockchain independent, though we are now married very closely to Cardano. We love Cardano, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, like there's a reason even IOG decided, right, that they need a different blockchain for privacy, right? So that makes a very interesting transition. And when this happens, we can start optimizing for a lot of other interesting aspects. You know, like, for example, then we can really go into the decentralization direction. Mm-hmm. And when you think about decentralization for the trading protocol, well, what do you want to optimize for? Well, execution speed, right? And you want the nodes to be close to the traders, right? So you can create kind of like mushroom network that automatically grows, let's call it like where the food is, right? So where the traders are, like where the traders are, there is a, and where's the trading activity, then there is close connection. So it's like a lot of very interesting things that can be done for trading.
It's very interesting. The paper, what came really came through to me was the fundamental ethos of composability and how you design this and how you mm-hmm. built this, which is something that's been, you know, popularized, and maybe people don't reference it all that much lately, but it is still the bread and butter of this space, especially in DeFi. It's building primitives and building blocks that can be stacked onto each other to build more and more complex things, and it can be used later to build things we don't currently have today. And I think that anyone building DeFi should be thinking about that, and also advertising that to the people that use it, and for them to understand the value of it. So this is definitely really interesting for me. But go ahead, you could react to that, and then I have another question.
No, I love the point you've made. On top of that, right, the layers that integrate with the user, right?
Yeah.
Because that's, I feel like, is often something completely lost in DeFi. Mm-hmm. So if we solve the integration with the different DeFi components, right, we still want to integrate with all the different types of the user. And for example, like the seed phrase is like the proverbial things that a lot of people are going to struggle with, right?
Yeah.
How do you integrate all those people? Like maybe you can build in such a way that, say, you know, like Robinhood, right, could integrate directly with this trading protocol, right? And then you have some proofed cryptography tied to your assets, right? And those strategies that they run are executed on the blockchain, right? But now they use their all expertise and user base, right? So we may have this evolution where the things are, you know, like intertwining with each other. And that would be amazing because, you know, like when this happens, it's like the true explosion. So sometimes you have all the right things at the right places, right? And the moment they connect, right, like everything changes.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, because that's exactly where I was going next, actually, was to talk about the UX of this whole thing. Because the feedback that I get often when I do content about DeFi, and mm-hmm. I don't even go as deep into DeFi as other creators do in this space. But the thing that I get feedback on a lot is that DeFi is really difficult to understand. People get burned a lot in DeFi when they're just getting started because they don't understand how things work. And even just simply getting started using it is tough. So what are some of the things that on the Axos side that you guys are thinking about doing or already have done to help resolve some of those challenges with UX and user education?
Right. So the most fundamental one is strategy composer, though, like it's still for the more advanced users, right? Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned, it's based on the graph tool. And actually what you write is very simple to understand, mm-hmm. but this is still not, you know, like your average user, right?
Yeah.
So now the next step is the algos that are very easy to understand, but still like there are parameters there that are not easy to understand, right? So now there's an entire series of the algos, and actually we've been working through the last science basically launched since February 6th on reference market making, which makes providing liquidity professionally as a market maker for you mm-hmm. much easier, right? So you want to achieve the level of simplicity that's similar to AMM. For one thing that's like so simplistic, the advantage is, right, that's actually much easier to understand, right? So basically get to that point where we can remove a lot of risk mm-hmm. and make it super intuitive. So basically say, okay, I want to provide to this pair, and you don't have to provide an extra information, right? So, and it's called reference market making because it watches everything that happens on the blockchain real time in other protocols. And it estimates based on that across the blockchain through spot and through instantaneous volatility. And it gives you very good and tight bid and ask. And that's kind of easy to understand, even if you don't understand the details, right? So that's one of the things we've been working for the casual users. But then we also have the features, like, for example, the basic mod, right? And the basic mod, again, does a lot of thinking for you, right? So if something is too complex to present, we don't present it. But if something can be make it simpler, we hide a lot of abstraction behind and we calculate the values for you, right? Mm-hmm. Under the assumption, you know, like it's safe for us to calculate those values. So for instance, a market order can be very dangerous mm-hmm. for a typical user. And we've created what's called smart market. And what smart market under the hood is, it looks at the order book, and that's on the Xlang level, right? So that's on the blockchain. And it can only execute when the order book is well-formed enough. And it also looks at the current best price, so like the ask. And basically, it applies the slippage on that. So it really actually supplies it as a limit order, right? But to you as the user, it doesn't appear because it's going to be executed. We know this for sure, right? But we provide still the bound, so you cannot hedge yourself, right? And Binance doesn't have this issue because every payday launch, they have market makers for, mm-hmm. right? Blockchain, especially Cardano, are smaller, right? So you have to build the security in that before you have market makers, it's still safe, right? Mm-hmm. And smart market is just one example, but we are actually bringing a lot of functionality the same way. And, you know, like once it's in the basic ones, of course, it's going to be on mobile and everywhere else. So my goal is that we can reach the people who either don't care, right? Because like some people just want to trade, right?
Yeah.
Don't care or don't have the capacity to understand, but in such a way that we don't take anything away from the experience by doing that.
It makes sense. I mean, in, you know, beyond that, for users that are surely out there, and I hear from them all the time that they don't understand this stuff very well, but they really want to. You know, I saw in your paper there was this idea of creating sort of like a education platform. Is that still something that you're planning on doing?
Yes. Absolutely. So education is a bit complex, right? So it's like a big vertical to launch, but we are actually already started working on that. So spoiler alert, actually, we haven't announced this, I think, but we want to launch a lot of educational content from ourselves, but also what I've loved, I've seen a lot of people from the community have been also publishing that. So we have to figure out how to reward them for that. Mm-hmm. I know some of them don't ask for the reward, right? But like that's a good ecosystem to have, right? Where the people are rewarded for the work. And if you think about that, it's kind of like yield farming in a sense, mm-hmm. because if the educational content spreads, it attracts new users, mm-hmm. it improves the protocol, right? So is that something that should be, you know, like rewarded?
Yeah, well, I don't really care about rewards either, but I would be more than happy to amplify some of that. If folks want to talk about DeFi concepts here, we can have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a win. And you brought up an interesting point on yield farming, because that's a question that surely was going to come up in this in the comments. I know it is. Hey, yes. Is there yield farming in Axo? Because that's the user acquisition model that most protocols build. So what's Axo's position on yield farming?
There is something better than yield farming, but we haven't released it yet. So it's going to be counted back to February 6th when the launch happened. Okay. So everybody who acted in one way or the other as a market maker is going to be rewarded. But now the nice thing about Axo is that you are rewarded for useful work, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of stuff in the typical liquidity pools just sits idle, right? Mm-hmm. And that makes the entire reward system much less efficient. And there's like nothing to improve, right? So it's just like kind of like compensating you for your loss, right? On Axo, you're going to get rewarded for actually providing the liquidity. So when somebody takes this liquidity, right, away. And also we've taken care of watch trading, because like the next thing that would happen is, oh, okay, well, let me trade between myself and then I can get a lot of rewards, mm-hmm. right? Well, no, it's not going to happen on Axo. And on top of that, there's another complexity, because there may be even value for providing we could recognize the market maker even if somebody doesn't take your orders, right? And that comes to basically to positioning the order book, right? Because it's good if there are at least few limit orders, right, at the price range, or there's like some algorithm, for example, like this like reference market making, that position in the right place. So there is also going to be reward for anchoring the order book, right? So you have a spread, you maintain the spread, and the spread is in the right spot, which means you provide the value maybe that wasn't like dynamic, you haven't traded with people, but you provide a good price range, right? So also that goes that. And this unfortunately is complex, so it takes time to check for all the nicks and knacks. But this is coming soon, and this is going to be applied up to the launch, and specifically for the up to launch, you know, it's like people taking a lot of risk. So I think that's something we're going to take into the account, because, you know, like, it's like from my point of view, I come from trading, right? Kind of like risk equals money, right? So if somebody takes more risk, they should make more money, right? It's kind of like sometimes you can take stupid risk, okay, should be rewarded for that, right? But you need to take risk to make profit, right? Unless either you guys go very bad, right? Or you are privy to some information you shouldn't have, right?
Yeah, unless you have some insider info. Which, let's be real, in this space, there is a lot of that too, to be honest. So that begs probably the most important question for, well, from Maxo's perspective and from somebody that's watching or listening to this, is like, as a user in the audience right now who is just hearing about Axo for the first time or hasn't tested it out before, what's the best way, in your opinion, to start using Axo for an everyday user?
Just go to axo.trade, have a look, click launch app button. And then if you are truly a novice, just click on the basic bot in the slider, make a few trades, and then I really encourage you to toggle it to pro, because if you think about that, pro mode doesn't have anything that complicated. It just gives you a bit more information, like chart, right? And then what I really like when it happens naturally is you come somewhere, right? And you may have zero knowledge, right? But by the act of interacting with something, you acquire that knowledge. And you may notice that on Axo, you have like this like information points in many places. And they are a good place to, you know, for example, like learn more how the order works, right? Because even something as simple as a limit order, market order, I'm quite confident, at least in crypto, a lot of people don't even exactly know how it works. But if you start doing that, you are going to be able to ask better questions. And by asking better questions, you're going to be able to make better decisions for yourself. So I would love Axo to be for people like a journey, right? You start at whatever point you want, right? But then you have a natural way to continue this journey, right? So we mentioned education. There's going to be a lot of stuff released. Unfortunately, it's not as much stuff I would love, right? But just like if you click around and experiment, then you see a lot. And then I encourage you to watch out for reference market making. I think that's going to be very, very interesting. And then I encourage you to try like limit market orders DCA. I think that's also going to be very useful. If you are really good, then just go to the composer, copy existing algo and just modify it.
Nice. So if you're an advanced user, you can use that graphing tool to sort of visually create.
100%.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll test that out.
Not only that, please do. And let me know what you think. And if you use this, right, you can share it with anyone. So it may be not advertised automatically to everyone, right, for security purposes, but you can send the link to anybody you want. And I've seen actually in our Discord people like discussing different market making ideas. And that's exactly what I want to see more and more in the future, right? Because like people, if you think about this, it's like kind of like a distributed trading flow, right? Like five people exchanging ideas together, right? And I don't know if people realize this, but there's like a lot of very small prop trading in crypto. So there may be like even a single guy who pays some software developer for some tooling, right? Or there may be a small group of friends that are doing that. And that's another place where I want Axo to really excel, that you can kind of like have all the tool building outsourced to you, So we have all the charting you want, you have all the data you want, right? You have the data immediately because how the OME network works, right? So you always have the data exactly when you need at the same time as everybody else. So that removes the, you know, high frequency trading completely from the network.
Thanks.
Bless you. And, you know, it's like different levels of entrance, right? But to Axo, you can enter on like any level you want. And by the way, like even if you are a very professional market maker, right? Like, let's think like the biggest market makers in crypto. I think that's also a very good system for them, right? Because they can translate all the prop algos they have one-to-one to a system like Axo, right? So the moment the volume is interesting enough for them, or maybe that's maybe sooner, right? Mm-hmm. But that's also a good place for professional market making. And that's something we are working on bringing onto Cardano as well.
Very interesting. So for, I mean, let's take it one level deeper, right? To kind of round out the conversation. Mm-hmm. I think that specifically in the Cardano space, which is relevant to you because this is where you started and, you know, this is where things were ultimately built. You know, in terms of scalability, there was this discussion when Cardano's initial execution environment was launched, which was like, DeFi is not possible, scale is not possible. You know, you really can only do one trade per block, basically, right? There was that whole discussion around concurrency and parallelism and how do you solve these problems? Can you maybe unpack that for folks in the audience that may want to dive a little deeper? How did Axo tackle that scalability challenge? You know, building on the analogy you made earlier with UTXOs.
Okay, cool. So let's quickly reiterate what was the issue. So the issue was that you don't have sequentiality. And the problem it creates is if you had a portion of liquidity here, portion of liquidity here, portion of liquidity here, right? You don't even know what price to execute that because that price kind of sits in the box as well as data, right? So now what had to be done by those AMM protocols on Cardano is they basically allow only themselves or the approved network of batchers to execute that. And only one batcher can execute at a time. So they basically queue multiple waiting orders at the same time. So this really like one transaction, but this transaction is really signed by the batcher, right? So if you think about like from the crypto perspective, it's kind of like not fully comfortable with the ethos, right? So like, I agree, that's definitely a problem. Cardano, if you want to build, it's not the best, how to say it nicely, not the best outcome, right? Like it's not the best experience for both developer and the user. We didn't have this issue because, as I mentioned, like we are literally perfectly matched for the Cardano. So for Axo, you have a sea like that's completely decentralized of independent strategies. And strategy doesn't have to be in single pair. You can have a multi-asset market making strategy, right? You may have an asset that, you know, like, I don't know, balances a basket of stable coins, like whatever you want, right? So now you have to have a generic set of rules that you define in Xlang that allows boxes to interact with each other. So then the only problem that remains is how do you ensure that the two boxes that are matched in the fairest possible way, right? So that's where the proof of fairness comes. And under proof of fairness, there's only one possible match, right? So what you submit, so there's like this OME network. So what happens is when you create, say like limit order, there's a created a new UTXO with the datum that references your limit price, and it references the script on the Cardano that represents the limit order. So now it's like under the limit order, you as the owner can do with this whatever you want. So you can close this, you can withdraw the funds, you can add the funds to this. But everybody else on the network can only be matched with you if two things are provided. The first one is, of course, proof of fairness. So that's the best offer for that trade. And the second one is they match the conditions. So for example, for the limit order is the limit price. So now the OME network, what it does, it observes everything that happens on the Cardano blockchain in real time. And whenever it sees new commitment, it registers this. In the same way, like if you see closed strategies, withdrawals, it also registers this. So our main network always keeps the track of the current state on the Cardano blockchain. And what it does, whenever anything can be traded, and it's also done in a very simple way. So you have this very complex strategy. So like, how do you know if it can be matched, right? Well, every strategy in real time is projected to a virtual order book, which I think is something also very easy to understand for people, right? So if you set your limit order at an ADA, so it's an ADA, right? So if somebody crosses you or matches you, then the trade can happen, right? But still, the trade shouldn't happen like in random price. It should happen exactly at the cross point, right? So you can pay cheaper. So for example, like if the current ask price is 9.5 and you say your limit order is 10, it should be matched at 9.5, right? Because that's the price at which you both met. So what OMI network does, it sees us from virtual order book. So it's literally crosses, right? So it's a very simple and cheap check. And then it says, okay, so this guy and this guy, those two boxes, right? And that's the proof of fairness. And that's the condition that they matched, right? And when it goes to the Cardano blockchain, what happens? First, let's say this guy is like also a limit order, right? It checks that it's getting at least the price it asked for. Check, right? So I know it's asked for to sell at least for 9.5. It's being offered 9.5. Okay, great, right? And this guy, I was at least 10. Same story, right? So this passes, right? So now the second check is proof of fairness. Is the proof, and you know, like because I have much like this like virtual order book updates, so we see like they are like sequential. So like you see the proof of fairness automatically evolving on its own, because every match is also the update to the current state of this localized order book. So it's iterative, right? Very naturally, right? So then it's very easy to point to the bid and ask, right? So now you provide the proof of fairness, and now Cardano blockchain basically evaluates this transaction, which matches one and the other. And of course, if all the data is correct, it's executed and both boxes change the value inside. So now this guy wanted, say, AXO, this guy wanted ADA, bank. Now they have ADA in AXO. But now what may have happened? Well, the trade is complete. So there's nothing else to done, right? So they're both in the final state. So now what OMI does is going to observe, hey, this has been executed and they both have nothing else to do. Right, and there's one thing in contract that OMI can also do, which is close the strategy. So if there's nothing else to do, it's going to submit the transaction that closes, and the closing can only return the assets to the owner, and the owner is identified by the ownership NFT. You get ownership NFT when you mint transaction, and what happens is for the assets, so for the strategy to be closed, you have to point at this ownership NFT, right? So you're the owner, right? And it can only be sent there. So as you can see, it's like we take all the security from the Cardano, like all the checking execution happens on Cardano, but we can find very complex condition matches and propose them. It's like this difference between computation, like the computation is very complex, right? So we abstract this away to OMI network. But verification requires much less data, so we only provide the information required for verification, which is much lighter. And this way, by the way, Cardano is brutal. You only have 16 kilobytes mm-hmm. for the transaction. I cannot find a nice word for that, so I won't comment on this. It's just like you could have many more nice things if the transaction limits have been different. But I believe with what we have, you can do amazing things. So we have an example of very complex mm-hmm. strategies that we have been testing. So you can do almost everything that you need. But that's a constraint I would love not to have.
Fair enough. This way. Yeah. I mean, I think whenever you build something, you can always look at it and be and find the bottlenecks that stop you from accomplishing mm-hmm. bigger and bigger yes. and bigger things. So was that the main challenge that you faced in building this?
That was one of the crazy challenges, because let me tell you, like the challenge wasn't what we tried to compile. It was the problem with the compiler. So at the moment, everybody only had access mm-hmm. to Bluetooth, right? And oh my, Bluetooth is such an efficient compilation tool that something that should end up with being, you know, like 2 kilobytes, you could easily end up like with 8. So you literally were wasting memory because your compiler not being efficient. You know, it's like, what's a good comparison? Like, it should work like Rust or C++, but it was like working, I know, Delphi, right? It includes the entire GUI with it, or like Turbo Pascal, right? Like the entire executable, like the runtime is crazy large. Thankfully, community sorted this out. So a lot of things became much easier for us when Plutarch has been released, because Plutarch allowed for very efficient compilation. And I know it may be like mumbo jumbo for a lot of people, right? But compilation is basically taking one representation, so for example, you know, like Xlang strategy, and compiling it to something that blockchain can understand. So it's kind of like translation, like say English to German, right? So now German blockchain can understand it. Right.
Yeah, especially it holds up too, because English is such a complex and nasty language. Translating it to something else with the same fidelity is tough. So same thing works in the world of...
Sometimes you have to include an entire book as a reference, right?
Exactly. So, Jarek, thanks so much for giving us all of this insight into how, first of all, how your vision for this sort of predated your choice of blockchain, how you decided on Cardano, and how you decided on building for the EUTXO model, giving us insights into how everything works and what makes Axo different. I would encourage anyone who's watching or listening to this to go and actually click around, even if you're not ready to make a trade yet. Click around, start learning the ropes. And of course, if you have any questions about this, leave them in the comments section or in the podcast drop box, and I'll send them over to Jarek if it's a question I can't answer. But most of all, thanks so much for being here, Jarek.
Hashoshi, pleasure. Thank you so much for the great interview. And you know, like, what makes it very unique for me to talk to you is like you absolutely understand it in depth. And thank you for reading the white paper. Welcome to 10 beeps club, right? Probably, you know, it's like not 1% of people who read that, but
0.1%. I'll take it. I love reading white papers because I always learn something I didn't know. And that's the best part about being in the space. So again, thanks very much for being here. Thanks everyone for watching and listening. Please do hit the subscribe button or the follow button, depending on what platform you're on. And I'll catch you on the next one. Cheers.